everyone. My name is Aarti, and this is the Mahabharata. Episode 50, Into the Forest. Also available online at www.themahabharatapodcast.com or facebook.com/themahabharatapodcast. Congratulations, everyone! We've officially survived Book 2. Welcome to Book 3, the Aranyaka Parva, Book of the Forest. The Forest Book of the Mahabharata is one of the longest books of our text, 299 chapters. Compare this to Book 2, which was 72 chapters, or even Book 1, which felt endless but clocked in at 225. It will take us through the first 12 years of the exile. There'll be action, there'll be travel, there'll be adventures. On very long journeys, we'll meet some very quirky people. Arjuna will get admission into grad school in the heavens. We'll climb the Himalayas. We'll wrestle serpents with surprisingly intellectual interests. And we'll spar with annoyingly insouciant monkeys. The Kauravas will visit. Draupadi will get kidnapped. There'll be the odd smattering of human sacrifice. And we'll hear some of the treasured stories of Indian lore. Nal and Damayanti, Savitri. The entire Ramayana story will be told in Book 3 with some interesting differences, and some characters will pawn hop from one text to another. And there'll be wisdom. Much of what we hear in the Gita, that tiny excerpt out of the sixth book, is already taught here in Book 3, where no urgent battlefield situation, no confused armies looking on, the Pandavas have leisure to delve into philosophical questions. So let's get to it, shall we? We left King Dhritarashtra heaving with anxiety, now seeing the future with a clarity that had eluded him while in the grip of greed. He's gotten what he wanted for his son, but he's also set the clock on his children's lives to run out in, roughly 13 years. While he's agonizing about that, let's switch to camera 2, which is following the Pandavas as they ride out, chariots packed with weapons, headed north. Question: if a king lives in a forest and doesn't have a throne, is he still a king? Yudhishthira's attendants certainly think so. 14 of them accompany him along with their wives to tend to his needs in the wilderness. Many townsfolk think so too the next day, as they gather around the office water cooler, furiously cussing BDK as spineless sellouts. You can't run a state like it's your own personal fiefdom. Okay, maybe it is, but still, there has to be law and morality. If Duryodhana's headed down Idi Amin Avenue, best we join the Pandavas. Hordes of citizens pack their RVs and execute a mass exodus out of Hastinapur. But seeing the long caravan trailing behind him, Yudhishthira pulls over in alarm. A hasty conference ensues in the ditch by the roadside. If all the good people leave, who's going to hold them accountable? My mum's there, Gramps, my uncle Vid, even the king is vulnerable. Someone has to bear witness, keep order. He persuades them all to return. With heavy hearts, sad for the Pandavas, the caravans reverse course. But a stubborn group of Brahmins is persistent. But how will I support you? Yudhishthira tries to reason with them. My brothers are already traumatized. How can I burden them further? But the Brahmins convince him they'll manage. You're going to want us around. There's no Netflix. We've got guitars. We'll worry about food later. But I have to worry, exclaims Yudhishthira in distress. I'm a householder. It's my duty to support you. Now I can't even fend for my family. He slumps down on a log, overwhelmed with guilt and shame. A sage Brahmin named Shaunaka sits down beside him. Is he the same Shaunaka hearing our story in Book One? That's a question for another day. He talks to Yudhishthira gently. Look, there are a million things in life to cause grief and suffering. The wise don't crumble before them. Let me tell you something King Janak used to say. No, not Sita's dad, the legendary wise Janak from the Upanishads. He used to say there are two types of suffering, of the body and of the mind. The pain of the body you can relieve with aspirin or surgery or soup, whatever works. But if you don't get a grip on your mind, it'll destroy your body as well. The health of the mind affects the health of the body. Calm your mind with insight, as one cools fire with water. Think about it. Why do we suffer? Because we want things, right? We want money and success, fame and comfort. We want the good things and we strive to get them. But if we can only be happy when we get what we want, it's a recipe for misery. Desire's a bottomless pit. The more we get, the more we want. It keeps us constantly thirsting, like fire in the hollow of a tree. It destroys you from the inside. So forget what you had. Let your desire go. Let your expectations go. Approach every situation, good or bad, with a determination to be calm. And you'll see. Adversity will roll over you like water on a lotus leaf. Listen to me, Yudhishthira. Freedom lies in wanting nothing. But Yudhishthira's overwrought. It's not for me. I have responsibilities to family, to society. I'm a householder. It's my duty to support others. How could a man like me be happy without first tending to those around me? It's a sin to eat by yourself without feeding others, the poor, the destitute, even birds and animals. You're right, and I get it, agrees Shaunaka. Caring for others is a sacred duty. So here's what you do. You make your best effort. Because let's face it, that's all you can control, right? You don't have power over every part of your circumstance, but your effort, you can control. So walk in the world observing the 8 holy precepts. Duty, study, charity, austerity, truthfulness, forbearance, self-control, contentment. I'll tell you a secret Lululemon doesn't know. This is what you call yoga. Yoga is not whether you can wind your leg around your neck, though that's pretty cool. Yoga is the habit of disciplining your mind. Restrain your emotions. Emotions are addictive. Don't indulge, don't wallow. Practice calmness and equanimity. That's the key to happiness. Wounded by the week's events, hurting, the Pandavas pitch camp on the bank of the Ganga, consuming only water. This will be the core group for the next 12 years. The Pandavas and Draupadi, their attendants, and a group of chatty Brahmins who will counsel, comfort, and tell many, many stories. The Brahmins' words are a balm to Yudhishthira's battered soul, but I think we can agree equanimity is easier with a cappuccino in the morning. Awaking early the next day, Yudhishthira sits in meditation, praying to the sun. You're the source of food which sustains all beings. Look at me. I have all these folks around me and no means to provide for them. Help me. To which the great traveller in the sky says, okay. He hands Yudhishthira a list of supplies to gather, samples of the 4 major food groups. Fruit, roots, meat. And does that say chocolate? Let me get my glasses. No, sorry, that's veggies. Damn. Draupadi watches in astonishment as Yudhishthira gathers the roughage and heads purposefully to the kitchen area. After a bumbling start chopping veggies, he throws everything in the pot helter-skelter. And a second miracle occurs. The food starts to expand until it threatens to spill out of the pot. Draupadi scrambles to fill plate after plate. It's inexhaustible. The sun gives Yudhishthira a wink. My gift to you. For 12 years, you'll never want for food. Take it easy, mate. Cheers. He disappears. Elated, Yudhishthira feeds the Brahmins, the servants, the animals, and his brothers. Then he eats the leftovers, followed by Draupadi. While the Pandavas finish breakfast, let's check in on camera one. Dhritarashtra is listening to reports of pandemonium on the highway, where slow-moving caravans are causing havoc with traffic. Some drivers have defiantly pulled over and are being interviewed by news crews. "We were trying to join the Pandavas," one man says bluntly, "because we've lost confidence in this government's ability to act lawfully. A great injustice was done the Pandavas, and we fear what such flagrant violation of norm has in store for ordinary citizens." Another pipes in hot-headedly. "The king has demonstrated he cares only about the whims of his son. If he can humiliate, rob, and disenfranchise his own nephews, what else is he capable of?" Public sentiment is harshly critical, and it stings. Dhritarashtra summons his brother Vidura, who watches the news looking glum. "Vid, you're the smartest man I know. You're always fair and impartial, so tell me, what should I do? If this negative sentiment keeps up, we might even have a Hastinapur Spring situation, open revolt. What can I do to win the hearts and minds of people?" Vidur has been biting his tongue for days, and now he explodes like a pressure cooker. "A state supposed to be grounded in law. You had a duty to deal equitably with all the kids, your sons and your nephews, but you took shameless advantage of Yudhishthira's good nature to annex his kingdom and push him into exile, the horror of it, your brother's children." He takes a breath. "It's not too late. You made a mistake, but you can fix it. Return to them all that didn't belong to you. Condemn Shakuni. Get Duryodhana and Dushasana to apologize. If it must be one kingdom, make Yudhishthira the heir, as he should legitimately be, and Duryodhana the second. Insist they par share and work cooperatively as brothers. When the townsfolk see such conciliation, they'll forgive and respect you." He throws up his hands. "You ask me? That's my opinion. Don't expose yourself to infamy. Don't imperil the lives of your children." It's not quite what Dhritarashtra had hoped to hear. "I'm so tired of hearing this, Vid. I should have known you'd take their side. Just think what you're saying. Sure, they're like my sons, but Duryodhana is my son from my body. Why would I pass over my own son to favour another's? Who does that?" He's furious. "You know what? You've never led me wrong, so I'm going to put up with this. But go. If you're so fond of the Pandavas, feel free to join them. A bad wife will leave, even if you beg her to stay." With that curious sideswipe, he storms out of the room to his chambers. Camera 2 here, reporting on the Pandavas' progress. The brothers and crew have been travelling westward in the direction of Kurukshetra, roughly in the modern-day state of Haryana. Is there a plan to remain there? Unclear yet. But as you can see, helicopter shot, they're moving at a brisk clip. In 3 days, they've crossed the rivers Yamuna, the Drishadvati, the Sarasvati, passing through several dangerous jungles. Now we see them arriving at the Kamyuka forest, just north of the Thar Desert in Rajasthan. Will they settle here? Is this the place they find solace? Only time will tell. Reporting for the BBC, this is... Yudhishthira surveys the area. "This is it. We'll settle here." The Kamyuka forest is lush and serene. There's Trinbindu Lake right there. The space is teeming with deer, so lots of yummy food. Though as vegetarian, it's hard to be sure. The Pandavas start setting up camp. But night falls quickly, and suddenly a powerful wind blows of such force that creepers cling to their trees, and forest creatures who emerged out of curiosity disperse in milliseconds. "What's going on?" puzzles Yudhishthira. Then he wheels around. a massive Rakshasa is headed toward them. Taller than the trees, hideous, eyes blazing copper, eight nasty fangs gnashing in a menacing snarl. Draupadi almost drops from fright, but the boys catch her. Seems like some demonic creature, surmises the priest Dhaumya. Don't worry, I'll conduct an exorcism. He rustles up some spells and incantations and flings the words at him. But the creature just stands there, looking perplexed. Who are you and whose? He thunders. That's how you greet folks in the Mahabharata, by the way, asking who and whose. Usually I have to hunt for my dinner, but good, you've come to me. I love barbecue human. Oh, calm down, will you? Responds Yudhishthira. He introduces himself. You may have heard of us, how we lost our kingdom. We're going to live here in this wood for part of our exile. But the Rakshasa stopped listening right at the name Bhima. Long have I waited, he hisses, for sweet revenge. My name is Kirmir. You killed my brother Buck. You killed my friend Hidimb. You kidnapped his sister Hidimba. Now I'm going to kill you. Bhima's astonished. A Rakshasa named Orange Tree has been nursing a vendetta against him? But already seething with rage at Duryodhana, feeling hot daggers in his heart every time he looks at Draupadi, frustrated, bitter, Bhima's ready for a fight. Arjuna lifts his bow, but Bhima stops him. Stay where you are. He yanks a 500-year-old tree out by its roots and faces Kirmir. Come on then, kill me. The Rakshasa lunges. Bhima takes his tree and cracks it on his head, but it breaks like a toothpick. He pulls out more trees and more, then picks up entire boulders, slamming them into the brute. But Kirmir's fiendishly strong. As they wrestle, from the corner of his eye, Bhima catches a glimpse of Draupadi. Something breaks within him. Oh no, not today, he growls. He grabs Kirmir by his waist and starts to shake him violently with such gale force strength that soon the Rakshasa's gasping for breath. His eyes recede in his head, his fangs start to rattle, and his whole body trembles. Feeling his monstrous form weaken in his hands, Bhima brings him crashing on the ground, locking knee on his hips and hands on his throat. He strangles him like a beast of sacrifice. The Pandavas roar with delight, applauding and cheering. They lift Draupadi and dance. It's a cathartic moment, a small instant of relief. They throw the Rakshasa's mangled carcass at the entrance of the wood and get busy pitching camp. In our next episode, the Pandavas will build cabins a la Alaska Bushmen, and their uncle Vidh will visit. Seeing his uncle dismount, Yudhishthira will be seized with fear. Oh no, he'll murmur to Bhima. Are they coming for our weapons now? If we lose the Gandiv, we've no hope of regaining the kingdom. The Gandiv, FYI, is Arjuna's iconic bow gifted him by Agni in the Khandava episode, like King Arthur's Excalibur of mythic dimensions. But of course, Vidh's not here for Arjuna's bow. Let's see how that visit goes, followed by a visit from Krishna, accompanied by the Panchals, as well as a plot hatched by Duryodhana. Next time, if you'll join me for another episode of the Mahabharata.